Hello, and welcome to the LSEG Sustainable Growth Podcast, where we talk to leading experts on topics right at the intersection of sustainability and finance. I'm Jane Goodland, and this week I'm talking to Yuki Yasui, who's the Managing Director of the Asia-Pacific Network of GFANZ, otherwise known as the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero. As you may know, GFANZ is a global coalition of leading financial institutions committed to accelerating the decarbonisation of the global economy. It was launched in 2021 by UN Special Envoy for Climate Action and Finance, Mark Carney, and the COP26 presidency in partnership with the UNFCCC Race to Zero campaign. Before we hear from Yuki, a quick reminder to follow us so you don't miss any future episodes. And also don't forget to rate us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other platform you use. Right, let's hear what Yuki had to say. Hello, Yuki. Thank you so much for joining us on the LSEG Sustainable Growth Podcast. I believe you're in Singapore today. So I've been really looking forward to speaking with you. And I know that you've been involved in sustainable finance for a really long time. Can you tell us a bit about that and also how you've come to be working with GFANZ?
Thanks very much, Jane, for having me. So yeah, I've been in sustainable finance for over 20 years. So actually, it will be my 22nd year now in sustainable finance. So I started at UNEP Finance Initiative in Geneva. So 16 years in Geneva and then 4 years in Bangkok doing the APEC, the Asia Pacific part of the UNEP Finance Initiative. So I joined GFANZ in June 2022. So 1.5 years into this role, which is in Singapore, as you introduced.
So GFANZ has got over 675 members across 50 countries. Tell me about that membership in the Asia Pacific region and what's the participation like there?
Yeah, so we've got, as you say, over 675 globally. And in Asia, we are about 65 plus. It's actually concentrated in just a few countries in Asia. So Australia, Japan, Korea, Singapore are probably the main countries where we've got the majority of the market players involved in GFANZ. But, you know, Asia is such a big region and it's got lots of other important countries like China, India, Indonesia. So these are the countries where they're not net zero, you know, the country's not committed to net zero by 2050, but they've got other goals like 2060, but they are nonetheless a really important country in terms of our net zero journey globally. So we look at them as very like key priority countries for our engagement, not necessarily to, you know, recruit them, but more to really share our work and try and make sure that the world is not too fragmented and that we have a common approach to net zero.
Yeah, and that's really important, isn't it? In terms of, obviously, there are going to be country by country differences, but it's really important to keep some degree of consistency and coherence. But as you quite rightly point out, you know, Asia Pacific is incredibly diverse in terms of, you know, the region's huge with so much difference and variation of countries across that part of the world that it must be quite difficult in some respects for you to engage with all parts of the region. So you've definitely got your work cut out for you. So tell me about your work. You obviously, it's quite early days. The Asia Pacific Network only launched in June 2022. But how are you thinking about your work programs? How do you organize yourself?
So right now, globally, we kind of explain our role as GFANZ in trying to support the solutions around three gaps that the finance sector faces. They are data gaps, action gaps, and investment gaps. So we do that at the APEC level as well at the network. So the data gap is basically that, as you know, and probably all the listeners know, we are faced with a lot of information gap around net zero, starting from like basic information, like what is your client's scope 1, 2, 3, and scope 3 being, you know, the most difficult to find. So data gap, we try and solve this by supporting more of the disclosure activities like, you know, ISSB, TCFD, but also increasingly we think that net zero transition plans are really important in filling that information gap and data gap for financial institutions. And we encourage net zero transition planning across all stakeholders. So it will start from government, you know, having a government to do a country energy transition plan, and the net zero transition plan would really be to be useful for corporates to do their own net zero transition plan. And then for financial institutions who rely on the corporates and the government's transition plan to do their own. So we're doing a lot around promoting the importance of net zero transition planning and promoting the GFANS framework around net zero transition plan. So that's like a data gap. Then there is the action gap. So this is where we do a lot of the outreach activities into Southeast Asia countries, but also increasingly to China. And we want to start our India outreach this year as well. So this is really to make sure that we have the ambition and then, more importantly, the actual implementation of their ambition and commitment to work together and to work individually around the net zero journey. So that's the action gap. And then lastly, just the investment gap. So investment kind of is the natural actual implementation of that action when it comes to financial institutions. So there it is very much about understanding, in Asia especially, really understanding what are the financing that we need to deliver. I mean, everyone knows that there's a huge gap, you know, investment gap across the net zero journey. But in Asia, I think there are two big gaps. One is making sure that there is enough money that goes towards emerging markets and developing economies. And secondly, that we need to make sure that enough money is going into the transition from the brown to the green transition. So, you know, it's all very well to try and pump in money towards the green stuff, the green projects and green companies. But if you don't support the brown companies and the brown economy to transition, you know, we'll never get to net zero.
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, we're hearing more and more about transition finance specifically in terms of mobilizing or ways to mobilize finance into those transitioning traditional economies, if you like, particularly in the energy sector, which we're going to come on to shortly. Yes. But before we do, I wanted to understand a bit more about, we talked earlier about the fact that you've got, you know, a huge region, a great deal of diversity, but can you help us understand a little bit about which countries are perhaps more advanced? And presumably that's some of the ones that you've talked about who are already with membership of GFANS, but also perhaps kind of thinking about why those countries are further ahead and therefore, you know, what we can learn and perhaps replicate elsewhere in the region.
I wouldn't like single out so many like countries specifically that are more advanced or less advanced, but rather I think what really helps the country to move on their net zero efforts is whether they kind of understood this as an opportunity, as a growth opportunity for them and a market development opportunity. And so it's about reskilling workers and the economy, reskilling the economy, developing new models that would boost their exports or get more foreign investment into the country, and that they see decoupling of their growth with CO2 growth as an opportunity rather than a cost. I think if they see any of those, it does tend to make the government more excited and the corporates and the FIs more excited in doing it. So in Asia, you know, there's a growing population with growing energy demand. So, you know, it's not like a mature economy, although parts of Asia are in the mature economy, but a lot of the countries in Asia are still fast growing. So we need to make sure that it is a decoupling of that growth and the net zero.
And do you think, I mean, different countries presumably are at different stages of that perception over the challenge, right? So some of them must be thinking, some countries are looking at this as an opportunity, whilst others are still kind of thinking this is a massive risk and cost, which frankly, you know, is difficult to absorb. And so is that where you GFANZ then seeks to engage to try to demonstrate that this can be an opportunity and this can be a growth story, actually all in the same effort?
Yeah, I think that's what we're trying to do. There's a couple of different ways that we are doing it. I guess one could be the example of the JETPs that we are involved in. So it's the Just Energy Transition Partnership that is going on in Indonesia and Vietnam. And these are G7 country-to-country partnerships, traditionally. But what's quite interesting about JETP is that they've decided to involve private finance from the start. So GFANZ is involved together with financial institutions in making sure that, you know, private finance is already seen as a key kind of capital mobilization partner of this government-to-government partnership. And it kind of provides that message that Indonesia and Vietnam can really attract foreign investment and very good, you know, quality investors into the country that are going to be supporting their growth into new industries and new export opportunities as well.
And specifically, what do those partnerships actually fund? Into, you know, what sorts of things is that finance going towards?
It's called Just Energy Transition Partnership. So it is very much focused on the energy transition. The idea is really to support the governments of Indonesia and Vietnam to accelerate their transition through both private and public finance. And traditionally, you know, these kind of G7 government to government would just directly, you know, do some public financing of, you know, government activities. But here we are talking about using government and public finances as leveraging private finance to come in and to do much more than, you know, what the government can do by themselves. So I guess here the role of the government is to provide, you know, support the Indonesian government and the Vietnam government with putting up a accelerated energy transition plan that can then identify where their investment needs are and what capital, you know, well, I guess then we're trying to respond with saying this kind of capital can fund this type of project. So everything, it can include anything from very green projects like renewable energy to some of the more frontier type of transition finance, which is like, how do you accelerate the retirement of coal power plants so that then it can be transitioned from coal-fired power plants, renewable energy can be accelerated.
And then in terms of thinking about other challenges specific to the Asia-Pac region, we've already talked about the fact that you've got kind of different stages of economic maturity in the different countries, and also that this there's a perception around whether or not this is a, frankly, just a cost or whether it's an opportunity. But are there any other specific challenges associated with transition in the region, which are unique to the region?
Yeah, I think there is definitely, because in Europe, a lot of these like high emitting assets, like coal-fired power plants or, you know, the steel factory or so forth, they're already at maturity or even like they're at the end of their use of life, or they've actually surpassed it and people are just extending it. And they're ready to be, you know, replaced by renewable energy or other low carbon technologies. Whilst in Asia, a lot of the fire power plants are in their early teens. So they're like 13 years old. Even like ASEAN, it's about 11 years old. And then in like Japan and Korea, they're still about 15 years old or something, very neat. And in Europe, it's over 30 years old. US, it's over 40 years old. So that means that the energy transition looks very different between Europe, US, North Asia and, you know, Southeast Asia, for example. And in Southeast Asia, people will be tempted to just keep on using them for the next 30 years until it gets to maturity and end of life. But if we do that, we'll be burning, you know, all our carbon budget. Two-thirds of the carbon budget is stuck with them. So it will be burning out carbon budget, which means that accelerating that retirement and replacing it with renewable energy is going to be one of the key priorities for the region, which doesn't exist, you know, in Europe. It does exist in other markets, like in Latin America. There are some countries that have a similar challenge as well.
I think that's a really useful example, actually, of how energy transition has to be really tailored regionally, because we're, you know, quite obviously we're not all at the same position, but it really does change the dynamic of what's required for that specific transition in that area. So thank you for sharing that, because it's, I think it's really, really useful. And so we've talked about energy transition and retirement of fossil fuel related sources. So let's move on specifically to coal, because I know that in December of last year, the network published recommendations for the financing of managed phase out of coal-fired power stations in Asia Pacific. So can you tell us more about those recommendations, why they're needed? I think we've kind of alluded to the fact, but why are they needed and what do the recommendations actually say?
Thanks very much for introducing this. So yeah, this has been our like flagship project for our inaugural year at the Asia Pacific Network at GFANZ. And yeah, we've already talked about the significance of it. And so what we try to address is the challenges that finance faces when it comes to financing an accelerated retirement of coal. There are two things that we thought was really important to address. One is the credibility question. So what is a bit difficult about financing brown stuff to go green, as it were, is credibility is one of the first things that people have a challenge with. Because if you're starting from something that is green, you know that it won't have any carbon activities involved. So you're fairly safe on that aspect. Whilst if you're supporting something that is currently brown and you are supporting them to go green, the question is greenwashing, you know, because you could be pretending to support their transition, or the company could be saying that they're going to be transitioning and you just pump money into it. And in 10 years' time, they might not have gone anywhere as well. Who knows? Because you are, you know, supporting a brown company after all. So what is the credibility of saying that you're supporting an early retirement of coal? What is it that you are standing on? What is the credibility based on? So there are three things that usually we in the recommendation, we said that we need to look at. It's the credibility of the country that the power plant is based. Does it have its own commitment to come out of coal and go into the low carbon net zero journey? And the company as well. What is the company's own ambition and plans and its ability to implement a managed phase out? And then lastly, you know, the characteristic of the coal-fired power plant that is in question itself. So the individual asset level credibility of it as well. So there's like three things that need to be, I mean, not all of them need to be perfect. You can have like, depending on the country, the word of the company could be enough for the financiers to see it as a credible, you know, managed phase out, even if the country itself might not have, you know, such a fantastic net zero coal phase out plan itself, because a lot of countries actually don't. They are still in the process of coming up with an energy transition plan that clearly states that there is no new coal.
I mean, I can understand the complexity, because let's say, for example, you might be providing transition finance to a particular company and some of their assets to finance transition. But if the government just moves that coal production elsewhere or creates the possibility of another power station fired by coal, then the net gain, if you like, is not really where we're trying to achieve. So that's why you need the kind of country and company level consistency, right?
That's right. Yeah, there's a leakage problem where you are like, even if you try and get one coal power plant to retire early, if another coal power plant pops up in another part of the country, we're still back to square one. So that's the problem. Although, if the company is committed and the company has influence in the market, it might be it might still be good enough to say that at the portfolio level, if the company is committed in doing this, it will provide enough message to convince, the country also to do so. And if it has enough shares in the market, if they're replacing a coal power with renewable power, that might really deter any new coal power plants to be built as well.
So the country context is hugely important here. So you've talked about the credibility issue. What were the other parts of the recommendation?
So the other part is actually the impactfulness. So there are three types of impacts that we were looking at. One was, of course, the CO2 impact. So what difference does it make if you retire a coal-fired power plant 5 years early or 10 years early? So we need to make sure that there is a real CO2 benefit there. The second one is the financial viability. After all, this, if private finance is supposed to come in here, it needs to be commercially viable. So that's the second part. And the third one is the just transition. So is it socially viable as well? Does the company and the country have a just transition plan that is associated with the managed phase out so that the community and the workers have an exit plan and are, well prepared to leave this coal-fired power plant to retire and that they can move on?
So I think this sounds like a great set of recommendations. The question is what do you do with them now? And that kind of leads into my final question, really, is about what does the go forward plan look like for the network? And I'm assuming promoting the recommendations is part and parcel of the next 12 months plus for you guys.
Yeah. So for our next set of activities, so we start our year, we're currently in year two of the network, and then we'll be starting year three from July this year. And so, first of all, we'll be holding the Asia Pacific Summit of GFANs in April, so 12th to the 17th of April in Singapore. We'll be talking about these three gaps, the data, action, and investment gaps, and how GFANs is working globally on this, and how, the APEC network is responding to this challenge. And we'll be having quite an exciting program for these 4 days during 12th to 17th April. And then the other things are China, we've started our work in China and we need to continue that and build momentum. India is the new country that we want to add to our outreach engagement for our year three. And the other thing that is coming up by June this year is a set of case studies around net zero transition plans in the region. So last year, we published a set of case studies on the components of net zero transition plans for financial institutions in Asia Pacific. So at the time, there weren't that many financial institutions that were thinking of net zero transition plans. People had different things that they were doing within TCFD, within sustainability reports, we would see as good components of a net zero transition plan. So we were featuring these components and saying that, net zero transition plan might be something new that you're hearing these days, but it actually comes from and builds upon a lot of work that you've already been doing. So we compiled a case studies report around that last year. This year is like our second iteration. And here we are actually now seeing the first set of net zero transition plans end to end. And some are already calling it net zero transition plan. Some are still not calling it that, but it has all the elements of it. So we're featuring those, especially in Asia, so that people can reference and learn, and you know, and it's a way of sharing experience. And we find that case studies are actually a really attractive tool for many people. So we'll be issuing that at the end of June. The other things are, like, as you say, managed phase out of coal is going to be still very important for us. Then we now have this principle-based recommendations on what good looks like on managed phase out, but we want to try and apply that to specific markets in Asia. So we're going to be applying it to the Japan market to see what kind of role does managed phase out have in Japan. Well, first of all, is it whether they've got a role in Japan, and if so, how, you know, what is the role, and what is the role of financial institutions in that managed phase out? So we'll be doing a market study in Japan, and then hopefully that will feed into our work with the Monetary Authority of Singapore's initiative called Traction, which is the transition credits, carbon credits initiative that they have. Meaning that we think that the financial viability that I was talking about can be solved possibly through carbon credits, that quite a lot of that financial viability question is something that the carbon market may be able to absorb. But the question is, you know, there again, you know, there's a whole new set of questions about what is the carbon credit's integrity and, you know, credibility. So that's a whole new question that is on top of, you know, what is the credible managed phase out. So we'll be working on understanding the carbon credits of managed phase out. And then there is the Southeast Asia policy engagement that we want to do. Basically, this is to try and engage and speak with financial regulators around net zero transition plans. So we want them to be excited and support their domestic financial institutions in doing net zero transition plans, because we think that is really good for their market development, both the financial market development, but also their economic development overall as well.
Wow, Yuki, you really do have a huge amount on your to-do list. And frankly, I'm exhausted just listening, but I do think that you're doing some incredible work. So thank you so much for everything you do in the region. And I absolutely look forward to seeing how you get on over the next 12 months.
Yeah, thank you, Jay. Look forward to coming again.
That's it for this week's episode of the LSEG Sustainable Growth Podcast. And what incredible work Yuki and the team are doing there in Asia Pacific. I hope you found that conversation both informative and inspiring. If you've got questions, comments, or someone you'd like us to talk to, then do get in touch by email at fmt@lseg.com. That's all from me, but watch out for the next episode very soon.